Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, we talk about the mega fight between Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin with Doug Fisher, editor of RingTV.com on RSG One Mic.
Log Talk Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
Is for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We
There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around the Jumbotron shows and fans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Brooks.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
Show this one mic.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
All right, welcome to RSG One Mic here with D. Wills. And Hank will be joining us a little bit later in the program. We are glad to have you here with us, supporting us on the Real Sports Guys podcast platform. One Mic is the show where we go deep into the topic. We try to really analyze it. When we have an opportunity, we like to bring someone who might be an expert on that topic to give us a much more deeper perspective on it. And tonight's show fits that bill. As I said in the opening, we have Doug Fisher, and those of you who are regular listeners of RSG, you know it's going to be a treat to have Doug Fisher. You see him on a lot of different platforms, particularly, I believe, when the HBO opening comes on. He's the one with the ponytail. You'll see sometimes they'll have Doug there. But Doug's had all these fights, well, a lot of them. He's seen a lot of boxing and also provides some great insight. If you want to hear what his previous podcast with us, just make your way over to iTunes. Just do a search of Real Sports Guys. It should come up and just look for the interview with Doug Fisher, and also all of our other podcasts. Our other show is The Big Show, where myself and shout out to the Game Changer and PhD, Marcus and Phil, we kind of hold that down. We usually have some special guests. It's like a seminar. In the barbershop, you never know what's going to happen, what's going to be said, a lot of energy with that. And then we have Inside the Park. That's with Hank Davis giving us, you know, another perspective on baseball, going beyond the analytics in the world in which we are so caught up in the numbers. You know, he tries to bring a little bit more soul back to it. You know, it's like, you know, having that Al Green playing underneath a little bit. So he'll bring that back to for you. Folks who haven't thought about baseball in a long time, you know, it's a good treat to hear Hank talk about a little bit. Then we have our other podcast, which is a specialty podcast, Hustle and Flows, Marcus and Sekou. You know, that'll come out quarterly, but, you know, around the turn of the year, Sekou will drop his top list of hip-hop albums for the year. You know, Sekou is just this incredibly intelligent person now. And that is part of it. And we have a whole bunch of other folks, whether it's, you know, Justin Page coming to hit us with the NBA, whether it's Eric Hamilton dropping, you know, the fantasy knowledge on us, those gems of it, or it's RJ Page coming back and hitting us with that baseball, or my boy the Hammer, you know, dropping all kinds of headache moves on folks. You know, we like the Wu-Tang of sports urban radio, and we're just going to keep bringing it to you. But tonight, we're talking about the big fight. You know, we had the big run-up with Mayweather and, you know, Conor. But, you know, now we get back to the real deal. You know, with a good fight, good entertaining kind of mix-up to come with that, you know, a way of just kind of warming our appetite a little bit. But now, you know, this feels like one of them fights that we're like, you know, if you're young enough or if you can get on YouTube and maybe Hagler-Hearns, you know, Hearns-Leonard, you know, those type of fights. It has that feel like that old school mega fight where you just never know what's going to happen, but both of them are coming to trade blows. There's going to be no pretension. People are not going to be fronting. They're coming in here to do what they need to do to get this victory, and Doug is going to be here to talk a little bit about that with us and helping us, you know, kind of understand and dissecting for, you know, for the casual boxing fans who don't really watch boxing. This is a fight that you should definitely check out. You're going to get your money's worth with that. And then there's a number of fighters who fought recently, and I want Doug to kind of comment on them a little bit. So we'll hear a little bit of that in terms of some things, wanting to have a little chance to reflect on the McGregor and Mayweather fight as well. So we'll get plenty of boxing. That's what we're going to be focused on, taking the deep with a primary focus on Canelo and Triple G as part of what we want to do for the show. Our hosts and all of our callers are brought to you by Carbon World Health, your complete solution for fitness, health, and beauty. Go to carbonworldhealth.com to connect with Dr. Nestor Rodriguez and his staff to learn more about lifestyle medicine. Tell them that the Real Sports Guys sent you. Follow up and like us as well at realsportsguys.com or look for Real Sports Guys on all social media platforms. As I said before, go to iTunes as well. Search for us. You know, give us a little bit of review. Love us fives and give us some love as well. Before we get in with Doug, there's a lot that's been going on. We had the opening of NFL season happening right now. College football is entering its really. There were a couple football games prior to the big Labor Day weekend, but we really feel like this is weekend two of college football. And there were some big time matchups, none bigger than the Sooners going into the shoot. Folks who are on my social media, you know, I got that connection to Ann Arbor and Madison, and so there's a lot of interest on my Facebook. You know, I got family who are rooting for the Buckeyes, and I can't understand, but that's how it goes. I still give them love. We're still family. The Sooners went down there and got the victory. I mean, they celebrated after they won that football game like it was national championship. I mean, they went off. You know, it was one of those you know, we gonna get it all in. They were waiting for, you know, for a year to make that connection, to get that victory, to get back in there, to kind of get that taste out of their mouths. It was quite a performance by a young man, Baker Mayfield, who at the end of the game runs around with the OU flag and attempts to plant it in the middle, T.O. style, with all the Buckeye fans watching. Woo, that's going to be one for the board. But he didn't care. You know, he got a lot of swag. If you check him out a little bit on YouTube, you know, Baker brings it. And I appreciate how he gets after it, how his guys give him love. It was quite a scene there in Columbus. You know, both teams played hard. And, you know, but at the end of the day, those Sooners did what they had to do to come out on top. And so it makes you think, wow, where do you go if you're Ohio State? And I've been saying this, and a lot of people have been getting on me. You just hating on Ohio State. And I've had a chance to watch them in Camp Randall. I've watched a lot of their games. And I've said, look, they fool you with smoke and mirrors. You know, Garrett can't throw downfield. that they basically are running the game through the running back and Barrett running, and hope that you miss a tackle on one of those receivers, they can take it. But there's no real kind of complexity or anything that's going you down. And so against most teams at work, because they just got better athletes, and their defense is going to be great, keep them in the game. They were great as much as they could be in this game, trying to hold it down. But Barrett just does not throw mid-range ball or deep ball well enough. And so against good defenses, they're going to basically crowd the line. They're going to key on the running back and key on him and, you know, whomever they got a running back. But, you know, I've watched them in person and seen it, and I'm like, there's nothing here that they're doing a creative. You know, number 16 is going to handle it when it gets tight. They get – and they brought Wilson in, came from Indiana with that explosive body offense, and you don't know how much of it is Urban being conservative, you know, that's one of the things, or, you know, Wilson not being able to get the most out of them. And sometimes I just think that some of these head coaches go back to what they know. You know, we heard all this stuff about what Saban wants to do down there in Alabama, and throw it downfield, or will he go back to what they know? Keep it conservative and hope the defense can have you there until the win. And sometimes it's what makes them great can also be the curse. And last night, I think that's what caught up to Urban. In terms of a few years ago, you know, when they had that fall against, you know, Michigan State, you know, you had Ezekiel there who was brave enough to speak up, you know, and say, look, you know, we're getting away from what makes us work. And so, you know, Barrett's a fifth-year senior. He should not be struggling at this point with those throws. And I don't know what they're not doing with quarterback development. You feel like he's a smart kid. He can figure this out, but there's something there that is not allowing to happen and got exposed against the Oklahoma team who was highly motivated to come in there and get that victory. So, you know, we're gonna keep an eye on them going on, but Oklahoma moves up to number two, and it's ringing out there in Sooner land. You know, so like the Sooners are back in. They got a rookie head coach. Bob Stoops was there last night. And then you saw Oregon make their re-entry into the national scene with Taggart leading the way, changing, you know, getting the energy out of those players. Unlike what we saw in Texas, you know, he figured out how to correct some things and get those players to play in all phases. Nebraska made a run to come back in there, but, you know, Oregon looks like old Oregon. And so, and then down in Texas, we got Herman saying we can't sprinkle any dust. So, hey, the season is upon us. It is moving. I know when Hank gets back, you know, maybe our next podcast, we're probably going to dig a little bit deeper into college football because I know he's loving it. Harbaugh and then we're able to get past and make their moves a little bit here this past weekend, but still didn't like what I saw at the quarterback position. They got to still continue to improve that space. You see Wisconsin sneaking up there. I think, you know, you have a person like Chris who doesn't get enough credit for the way he coaches. He is probably the most unassuming coach in America. And maybe next to Heller, is it, USC. These are two coaches who are kind of mild-mannered but really intense and want to win. They're making some noise. And the road for the Badgers looks pretty good. So this is going to be an interesting thing. But today, tonight, it's all about boxing. It's all about boxing. And we're going to have some fun with it. You know, we're fortunate enough, you know, that, as I said before, when Doug was on with us to kind of, as we were previewing the Mayweather and McGregor fight, I said, we're not going to talk about Canelo and Triple G because we want him to come back. Then we want him to, you know, let us know who he thinks is going to win. But there's been a whole bunch of that with boxing. And so, you know, I feel fortunate enough to have the opportunity to connect with him. And it's just really made what we do at RSG much more better having someone like this who we can call on to speak to you, speak to people we think that we know are real, true sports fans and want to get beyond just the surface stuff. So, you know, we are happy right now to introduce my friend and our friend at RSG, Doug Fisher. Welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How you guys doing?
Man, we're doing well here. You know, Hank is going to be joining us in a little while here, and he'll probably hit you with a couple questions. But we're glad to have
Great.
You on. It just feels like a different fight weekend, and we'll get into that. But as you know me, I'm always having
yeah.
a couple other topics I want to hit before we get to the state.
Sure,
because we're really going to get
there's
to the state.
There's a lot going on
tonight.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on, and I'll hit a couple things. And as we you know, see opportunity to hit some other things. Let's make it. But let's go back now that kind of the previous fight is over. I didn't get a chance to really connect with you much about this, but just your general reflections on the McGregor Mayweather fight, and then just you know Floyd, you know, and kind of bow on his career. Can you just provide us a little bit of reflection? It'd be nice to hear your perspective.
I mean, you know, I didn't really view it as a boxing match, even though it was officially sanctioned as one by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. I just couldn't take it seriously as a sporting contest, you know, for obvious reasons. Mayweather is the first ballot future Hall of Famer, an arguably great fighter, certainly one of the best of his era, and I'm talking about the last 20 to 25 years, which is saying a lot, and McGregor was a man who had never fought in a four-round professional bout, had no real amateur experience to speak of. I couldn't take it seriously, but the as an event, it certainly had merit, and it resonated, and it had people talking outside of boxing and outside of the sports realm, and even outside of entertainment. I mean, it was just like...
Yeah.
It was that kind of topic. Like, it was the kind of thing that everybody was talking about at the in line at the supermarket, or, you know, when parents are picking their kids up from school. And they weren't just like, it wasn't just like people were talking to me about it because they know I'm the boxing guy. You know what I mean? Or they weren't just talking about it to their friends who they know follow the UFC or MMA. Or just Conor McGregor fans. Like, they were just people who don't watch MMA or boxing were talking about this fight, this event. So it was very real as a business venture, obviously, but just as kind of a pop culture phenomenon, I guess, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so, I mean, there's been no real official announcement of how many buys it did, but I mean, I think it's safe to say that everybody covered their ass. I think everybody's happy. You know what I mean? Like, Mayweather and McGregor were making record guarantees for their sports, for their respective sports. I don't think they're going to have any trouble covering that. And I think Showtime and the UFC are going to be happy with whatever the final count is. I think it did great money. I think there's rumors that Dana White has told people that it did 6.5 million buys, and it's not clear if that's, you know, U.S. you know, domestic television, or if that's worldwide, or if that includes the UFC Fight Pass or what have you. It's probably international. It's probably like all of the pay-per-view buys internationally, wherever it was being sold in that form, and if that's the case, that's great. It did well as an event, and it people were talking about boxing, and right up into the fight, and definitely after the fight, whenever people were talking about Mayweather McGregor, they would also talk about Canelo versus Triple G. So that's a good thing. I mean, that's good for, and people know who Canelo is. Gennady Golovkin is far from a household word. Our household name. He's known at obviously in boxing, and some casual boxing fans know who he is now. And there's some general sports fans who recognize him, but a lot of folks don't. So when his name is being uttered on, you know, Fox Sports and ESPN and in general sports news platforms, it's a good thing. He deserves to be recognized, and the Canelo Triple G Showdown deserves all the attention that it is receiving, and so that's good. And you know, I just look at 2017; it's just like a great year for boxing. It's just there's been so many good fights and quality matchups, and the best fighting the best that we've already forgotten about. Title unification bouts that took place in the first quarter of this year. I mean, we've already forgotten about Keith Thurman fighting Danny Garcia, and you know, Badou Jack fighting James DeGale, and you know, all these excellent performances that we've had early on in the year. We've already forgotten about them. It's, I mean, it almost seems like Golovkin fought Daniel Jacobs, who was a terrific challenger last year, but that took place in March. But that's just the kind of year it's been. It's been so many quality fights that we can't even keep track of them. And this coming Saturday, I think we really have the crown jewel for boxing, because it's like a legitimate championship showdown. And it's not just like the two best middleweights. It's the two most popular middleweights and guys with legitimate claims to the championship going at it. And style-wise, it should be an entertaining fight.
Well, you mentioned one of the people that won. Cause I think there were some undercard stories. And Badou Jack, you know, made a statement against, you know, Cleverly.
I think his last couple of fights, even though he had to settle for a draw, I think in his last two fights, I thought he handily won both of them. And I really kind of looked at him as the number one super middleweight, particularly after the DeGale fight. I thought he proved it in that fight. I don't know how he didn't get the decision. But obviously, he's stronger at 175 pounds, so he's definitely a welcome addition to the light heavyweight division. Yeah, the light heavyweight division. Yeah.
And then you had Gervonta Davis, kind of have a controversy at the start and finish. You know, came in, over the weight limit, and then
that was disappointing.
Stoppage, but yeah, and just, you know, someone who was kind of this rising star who had gone to the UK in the previous fight. And made a statement, you know, on another soil, and just kind of going like this was the moment for him. You know, I think Mayweather was looking for him to take the torch. Badou came out of the camp and just kind of stole the show. But he just kind of, I didn't expect he would have that that kind of performance against Francisco. You know, what?
Yeah, that guy he fought was not a legitimate contender.
Yeah.
You know, I chalked it up. I'll say one word that can explain the respective performances between Jack and Davis, and that's maturity. That's the word, is maturity. And now, Gervonta Davis was a really good amateur. He was a really good U.S. amateur standout. And obviously, he's talented enough as a professional that he was able to be moved into a world title fight by his 21st or 22nd birthday. That's really rare. You know, particularly in America, where guys, you know, you don't turn pro until you're 18 years old. You know, not so rare, you know, for fighters and fighters from the Philippines and, you know, other countries where you could turn pro at 15 or 16. But for Americans to win a world title that young, it means something. It means he is special. He has special talent. He is precocious. But 22 is also 22, and some men are still like teenagers when they're 22, and others they are. They're at 22, they're like 32-year-olds. And obviously Davis is not like that yet. He's not quite the professional where he's going to have his weight together and that he's going to take care of business against the guy that he's supposed to shine against. You know, the showboating and, you know, the shenanigans, that to me just spoke to maturity, and hopefully this is a learning experience. And, you know, with Badou Jack, he's been brought along more gradually. He wasn't kind of rushed into the title. He had a setback, which kind of slowed things down.
Mm-hmm.
But he learned from it. Like, he suffered a first-round knockout a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But they kind of brought him back gradually, step by step, and each fight after that first-round stoppage, he improved every fight. Literally, he improved every fight all the way up into the Nathan Cleverly fight, and then he obliterated Cleverly, who was a title holder and had held a previous world title and was, you know, world ranked at light heavyweight and was more experienced at that weight. And a guy who'd never really been blown out like that before, except for when he fought, you know, Sergey Kovalev, when Kovalev was at his absolute best. So it was a big statement, but, you know, it was happening at the right time for Badu Jack. You know, he's moving up in weight at the right time, and he's a mature guy. You know, I think he's in his early 30s or whatever, and he just, you could tell when you talk to him, he's just got his head screwed on straight. He knows what he wants to do. You know, he's not trying to show off. He's not trying to impress anybody but himself. And that shows in his performances.
Yeah, and that's what, because when you say something like, you know, about maturity with Gervonta, it's because I thought he was, you know, if you think about the two people that, and I'm going to, I don't want you to go too deep in him, because I want to talk about this person in terms of where do they go from here in this next segment. But I will mention him. But, you know, we look at where Floyd was putting this stuff. He's putting it with Adrian, and then he put it with this young man. And I thought he was handling the maturity much more better than Adrian.
Right.
And that it seemed like he was in there working. And that's why I was so surprised with the way he came into it. Because even though he had the showboating in it, it seemed like it was appropriately in the competition space. It didn't seem like it was as much that kind of stuff that then flowed outside the competition space, which I said, okay, that's just, you know, even Floyd had some of that. But outside the competition space, it seemed like he still had things together and was focused and was really paying attention to the Floyd formula. You know, and even Floyd was overweight against Marquez back in 2009 once. I thought that was more a tactic than him just being overweight. I thought it was just Floyd.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to go for the victory. So, but even Floyd had that, and it was kind of able to refocus him a little bit. And so I was surprised in some reports that he was sick and he was having some of that, because he just seemed like those previous fights, he was all business. Like he knew this was going to be the one where all the lights were on him. And for Floyd, I think.
Right. But I think that's a factor, all the lights being on him.
Yeah.
I think that really is that I mean, it's one thing to fight for your first world title, you know, against a solid but unspectacular belt holder in Jose Pedraza. It's another thing to travel to the UK. That's a big deal, going to the Lions Den to fight an undefeated guy. But then it's a completely different stage when it's a pay-per-view event like Mayweather-McGregor. There's literally never been anything like that event, really, in the history of the sport, like a media event of that magnitude. I mean, in many ways, it surpassed Mayweather-Pacquiao in the attention that it attracted, because it just brought in this entirely different demographic. I mean, it brought in Middle America, because Middle America is way into the UFC. I almost said mixed martial arts, but it's really the UFC brand that is synonymous with MMA here in America. And it brought in international interest, all of Europe, certainly Ireland, because of where Conor McGregor is from. And so, I mean, and let's not forget the buildup to Mayweather-McGregor was like, it was straight out of the WWE. I mean, to me, it was all kind of scripted. But if you're a young man and you're like there and you're kind of following along with this, that I'm imagining that can get into your head to where you think, okay, I got to put on a certain type of show, or maybe it can distract you or whatever. And if you are sick and you do miss weight, maybe that can play with your head a little bit before you step into the ring. Because on paper, Davis should have just outclassed him, should have just taken care of him.
Yeah.
You know, rather quickly.
Yeah,
what it was. Yeah, but there's the mental part of boxing is every bit as important as the physical part. So it's, you know, and I agree with you. I do think Davis is somebody that trains hard, and he's usually very focused when he steps into the ring, mentally speaking. But I think maybe on August 26th, he wasn't 100% physically speaking, but he definitely wasn't all the way there mentally speaking. And I think that's just a maturity thing.
One of the things, and before we get into to what I call the state, the big fight, I kind of think the segment I want to do with you, where do they go from here? I have two fighters. Adrian the Problem Broner, Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. Where do they go from here?
With Gonzalez, I think he should retire. I think it's – I mean, he's pushed his body to the limit, and he's just – he's fought tough cat after tough cat after tough cat, and really flyweight was his upper limit, physically speaking. Gonzalez is a guy that I followed – I knew about before he won his first world title, and that was at strawweight. And at 105 pounds, he was a big guy, and he was the guy with the one-hitter quitter type power. When he stepped up from 105 to 108, junior flyweight, he was still a knockout artist, but he had to work at it. When he moved up to 112 pounds, he really had to work for his knockouts, and he didn't always get them. And when he did get them, they were late, like the Brian Belloria fight, and he took punishment. And when he stepped up even to his fourth weight class and made history for Nicaraguan fighters, he had surpassed his limit, and then the wear and tear of that career of, you know, 45-plus fights and that fighting style. And I'm not just talking about the amount of punishment he took in the exchanges, but the way he trains and the way he fights. He's a volume puncher. He's throwing like 100 punches a round. That burns you out. And you have to understand the flyweights, they're generally old by the time they're in their late 20s. Early 30s is old for a flyweight. 35, 36 years old is like 44 or 45 for a heavier weight class fighter. So he was already kind of pushing his limits when he stepped up to 115 pounds. And I think previous two fights against Carlos Quadras and the first fight with Sorungvisai, they took their toll. They really did. And I think the death of his trainer did something mentally and spiritually to him. And losing for the first time did something mentally to him. To where when he stepped into those ropes, and I was at StubHub Center in Carson, California last night, when he stepped between those ropes, he didn't have that aura. He really didn't. And he went in there and, you know, he fought his usual style fight, but he just didn't have the same zip on his punches. And the other guy was supremely confident. And he's a monster. That Thai fighter is a beast, like a lot of Thai fighters are. You know, if they're going to make a name for themselves outside of the country, you got to be something real. If you're not special, if you're not special talent in terms of boxing or athletically, you are one tough son of a bitch. And this guy might be a little bit of both. So, I mean, he took care of business, but the way that Choco Latito was knocked out, I don't think he comes back from that. And he's made enough money in recent years to where he can retire comfortably in Nicaragua, where he's beloved. He's a national hero. And his resume is awesome. I mean, he's going to go into the Hall of Fame. I don't think there's anything more for him to prove. And I think he's putting his health, maybe even his life, in jeopardy if he continues to fight. Because let me tell you something, there are no soft spots in the junior bantamweight division. That is one of the deepest divisions in boxing, if not the deepest and most dangerous and formidable division in all of the sport. As for Adrian Broner, you know, he's still young. And he's a durable guy. I mean, he may not be the next Floyd Mayweather as he was touted some years ago, but he's got underrated toughness and durability. And I still think, if he gets his head together, maybe he'll never beat a fighter like Mikey Garcia. You know, no shame in that. But I still think he can be competitive with a lot of junior welterweights not named Terrence Crawford. So I would like to see him in there with some of the contenders, you know, the contenders who are his age and, you know, more to his level, because I think Crawford is an elite boxer like Mikey Garcia. And I don't think Adrian Broner is an elite boxer, but that doesn't mean he should retire. He's still young. He's got a lot of experience. And I think Broner's entertaining. In fact, I liked it during that post-fight interview that he did with Jim Gray. And Jim Gray said, hey, this was a do-or-die fight, a make-or-break fight. He's like, no, that's what you guys said. I'm going to come back and fight, and everybody's going to come out and see me again. And maybe not as many people. He's right in that, you know, when he fights again, Showtime is going to televise it, or somebody's going to televise it. And there will be interest in the fight, you know. He is what he is. He's not like a super champion. He can still be a world title holder, though, and I still think he can be in good fights. And I think there's no doubt in anybody's mind that Terrence Crawford has probably had his last fight at 140 pounds. So when he moves up to welterweight, in search of those, you know, bigger paydays and all that kind of stuff, pound for pound supremacy and all that kind of stuff. All those belts that he holds are going to be vacated. In fact, he's already vacated the IBS belt. So I think there's going to be some good contests held at junior welterweight for those vacant sanctioning organization titles. And I honestly think Broner should aim for one of them. I don't think he's got the power to get the kind of respect that he used to get at junior lightweight and lightweight fighting at welterweight. And at 147 pounds, there are guys who are going to hit him as often as Mikey Garcia did, but a lot harder. I don't think he needs that in his life. So I think he should definitely stay at 140 pounds. Wait for Crawford to vacate. Go for one of those belts. And I think he could be in really good fights with you know, young contenders.
Do you think he needs to change? He feels like a person that needs to change trainers. And Paulie,
you know what?
Paulie came out supportive. I love to see Paulie actually training, but Paulie came out was like this guy's only 28. People put dirt on me when I was and I had a title by the time I was 31. I feel like he needs to change and get a different trainer. He needs to get out.
Yeah,
of that,
you know, but
his
I don't like
zone.
I don't. I'm one of these guys. I don't like it when people say a fighter needs to change trainers after a loss because, I mean, losing is just part of the sport, and it's not, you know, you can't always blame the trainer, you know what I mean? But in this case, I think, and it's kind of like the John David Jackson, Sergey Kovalev situation. It's not like their union made for a bad fighter, but if the fighter and the trainer can't respect each other, they shouldn't be working together. And with Broner's situation, I know he respects Mikey Stafford, and I think Mikey Stafford is an excellent trainer. And the proof is that he not only developed Broner into a four-division title holder, but also Robert Easter Jr., who holds a title at lightweight, and Rashi Warren, who had held a title at bantamweight or junior bantamweight, I believe. So I'm not saying that Stafford is a bad trainer. I know he's a good trainer. He's an excellent amateur trainer. But the problem, no pun intended, is Broner's not listening to him. And if the fighter can't listen to his chief second, to his coach, to his head trainer, you got to move on. So there might be somebody out there. I don't know who a good fit would be. Ronnie Shields might be really good for Adrian Broner. I don't know. Here's my question. Whoever Broner goes to, who's going to be able to tolerate his antics? You know what I mean? Because some trainers, they'll tolerate anything. But the really good ones, I wonder how much of that nonsense, if Adrian is still bringing that to the training camps, they will tolerate. But I do agree with you that there does need to be a change, because if you can't listen to Mikey, then, you know what, find somebody that you're going to listen to, because – otherwise, he's not going to learn. And the trainer's going
to
get pissed off. You know what I mean?
That's right. This is what we're talking about. We're getting hyped. We're getting hyped here. This is good stuff. You're listening to RSG One Mic with D. Wilson. And I'm here with Doug Fisher, editor of RingTV.com. And just, you know, all around great, you know, boxing analyst and just, you know, someone who's passionate about the game, and, you know, you can hear it in his voice, and we love having him. When we come back, we're going to get into the fight, the mega fight, everything that you're all waiting for here on RSG One Mic.
There's one thing I want you to do for me.
What?
One, two. Check me out right here, yo.
Yo, the sun don't shine forever, but as long as it's here, then we might as well shine together. Better now than never. Business before pleasure. P. Diddy and the fam. Who you know do it better.
This is Doug Fisher, editor of RingTV.com, and I'm on the Real Sports Guys podcast.
RSG One Mic, and we're here with Doug Fisher. We've been talking about and warming up, give you a little bit of, you know, some of that, you know, that pre-meal kind of setup. You got the lettuce, you got a little bit of that, you got some appetizers to go to kind of get you going. But now we're going to get into the steak. We're going to get into the big fight. that's going on at T-Mobile Arena there in Vegas. Ready to rock and roll. We got Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin, Triple G, going in there. And this fight, to me, I feel like we're looking at this. It's got that Hearns, for me, for boxing. It's got that Hearns-Hagler feel to it, where there's going to be no pretense. When the bell rings, you get your hands up, because folks are throwing. They're not coming here to have a conversation and to dance around. They're here to put some pain on each other. And so no better person to kind of get in with us, this fight with us, than Doug Fisher. And so, Doug, I want to kind of set the table on here. For the casual fan, this thing right here has potential fight of the year. You know, if you were describing these two boxers and trying to get the casual fan who's kind of peeking in now that they've been hyped a little bit, you got some UFC people who looked over and said, hey, that boxing thing is kind of cool. You know, we're going to keep up. We're going to check this other fight out. I don't really find boxing, but it sounds like there's another mega fight coming up. Kind of set the table with these two fighters and who they are.
Well, I would say you want to tune in because of their styles at the end of the day. And the fight is a legitimate mega event because these guys aren't just two of the best middleweights in the world. They both don't just have legitimate claims to the championship. You know, Golovkin is a unified title holder. He's got more belts than anybody at 160 pounds. But Canelo is the lineal champion. He's the man who beat the man who beat the man, going back to the last undisputed middleweight champ, which is Bernard Hopkins. And he gained that when he beat Miguel Cotto in November of 2015. And he also earned recognition as the middleweight champion by Ring Magazine. It's a recognition that Gennady wants from Canelo, and he's coming to get it. And he's that type of fighter. He's a seek and destroy fighter. He wants to be recognized as the middleweight champion. He wants that, and he wants to get it from Canelo. Canelo, on the other hand, is very proud young Mexican champion who wants respect. And he's had respect at junior middleweight, but ever since he stepped up to middleweight, it's all been about Triple G, Triple G. Everyone's been asking him. From the moment he beat Miguel Cotto, when are you going to fight Triple G? He didn't fight him in 2016. The people in his own country were saying, well, you're scared. You gave up that WBC title so you didn't have to fight him on the WBC's mandated schedule. What does that say about you? A lot of people were saying, hey, it's never going to happen. They were doubting Team Canelo and Golden Boy Promotions and saying, you guys are going to try to wait Golovkin out. You want him to get old and all that kind of – that stuff hurt his pride. He's a young man. So he wants respect. And what better way to get respect as a middleweight in the middleweight division than to beat the monster of the middleweight division? And that's Gennady Golovkin. That's Triple G. So you have that kind of build-up to this. But style-wise, you're talking about a technical, power-punching, pressure fighter in Triple G. And then you have a proud young champion who is in his physical prime, at his peak, at his athletic peak, 26 years old, and finally fighting at, I believe, a natural weight class for him, because I believe he had been draining himself fighting at junior middleweight or at 155 pounds for the past year and a half. So I think he's going to be stronger than ever. So you put that all together, and you just have – we might get an explosive fight like Hagler-Hearns, but I think it goes a distance, and I'm thinking it's more like Hagler-Duran. I'm thinking it's like Triple G is like Marvin Hagler, and Canelo is like Duran, where you have a guy coming up in weight, but a guy who has more professional experience and is savvier than people get him credit for. A lot of – you know, I remember back in the day people would – you know, hands of stone, they talked about those cold black eyes. They talked about Charlie Manson in boxing gloves. He's just a killer. You know, he's just that guy going out there to rip your head off, and they were right, but people forgot about his technique and his defensive prowess. And that was on display when he fought Marvelous Marvin Hagler. That was 1983, and that was really Hagler's first big fight. Hagler wasn't able to get the stars of the sport to fight him until Roberto Duran said, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm not afraid of this guy. He's not that tall for a middleweight. I'm going to go in there. And he was able to last the distance because he had that savvy. He had that ring savvy. And that's something that Canelo has that's underrated, just as it was with Roberto Duran. Canelo got that head and upper body movement. He's very good on the inside where he'll slip a punch and counter. Got very good inside technique with those uppercuts, which Golovkin is susceptible to. And he's also a very good body puncher. And I think Golovkin is that kind of fighter where you can hit him in the face with your best punch and he'll smile at you and wave you on. Hey, come on, bring it on. But you tap that body, I wonder what happens. Because I think there were points in Golovkin's fight against Daniel Jacobs where Jacobs tapped him downstairs. And it made him back off. Jacobs got respect.
Yep.
Jacobs wasn't committing to the body, planting his feet, and throwing it Mexican style, left hook to the liver. He wasn't doing it like that. He was punching on the fly, so he didn't have his full weight behind those shots. But I noticed, and I was there at Madison Square Garden just this past March, I noticed from ringside, Golovkin would wince a little bit, and he'd definitely take that step back whenever Danny Jacobs would fire downstairs. So I wonder what happens when Canelo goes to Triple G's body. And vice versa. I wonder how well Canelo takes a Triple G shot to the jaw or the body. And I know we're going to see a lot of hard, accurate punching.
Mm.
So you said it's going to be, it's going to go the distance. Who do you have?
I do. I'm in the minority. I'm in the minority with that. Yeah, I do. I think it goes the distance because I think Canelo fighting at 160 pounds, he's big. He's bigger and stronger. He's been able to train harder than he normally does because normally in his camps, probably 3 weeks out before the fight, he has to go about that process of cutting weight. Most of his camp, he's training and he's sparring at around 170 pounds. And then he's got to start drying out. He's got to come down below 160. He was fighting at between 154 and 155. And at some point, and it definitely occurred last year, that became unnatural for him, and that became quite a struggle for him. And I think it may have affected his performances a little bit. And maybe for years it's been affecting his stamina. He's been worried about his stamina, so he's been a little bit economical, let's say, with his offensive output, particularly down the stretch of a fight. And I think being able to train at his natural weight right up until fight week, I think that's going to be good for him. I think that's going to make him really strong. And Triple G, we always know. He always comes in great shape. He kind of reminds me of Bernard Hopkins in that he's never more than 10 pounds overweight. He's one of those guys where when the WBC does that 30-day weigh-in, you know, he's like 8 pounds over. And I think they just did their 10-day weigh-in, and he was 164 and a half pounds. So he's right there. I mean, he's going to make 160 easily. So he's always in shape. And he's just naturally strong. I don't know who's physically strong. I'm going to say Triple G is physically stronger, but I think Canelo being 26 years old, I think he might be a little bit more athletic. There might be a little bit more fluidity and snap on the end of his punches. He's not as heavy-handed as Triple G by any stretch of the imagination, but I think his hands are a little bit quicker. And when he puts those combinations together, he's they're more fluid. There's a little bit more athleticism with Canelo's shots. So we've got two offensive guys that are also technicians. I think Triple G's got maybe the better overall foundation thanks to that extensive amateur background. He's got really sharp technique. And I think Canelo is better defensively speaking and just maybe a little bit more dynamic with his offense. So, I mean, when this fight plays out in my head, I don't see it being boring by any stretch of the imagination. It's got to be good. It's got to be. And it may not be a shootout. It may not be Hadler-Hearns, okay, because these guys are going to respect each other, and they're both smart in there. And I think when Triple G is in there with somebody that he respects, he doesn't just wade in there the way he did against Dominic Wade or Kell Brook. You know, when he was fighting Danny Jacobs or when he was fighting David Lemieux, who was also a power hitter, he was working behind that jab, and he was gradually putting that punishment on his opponent. So I think he's going to take the same tactics with Canelo, and Canelo's kind of a natural counterpuncher. So it may take a few rounds for it to heat up, but I think it's going to be quality boxing throughout.
So it sounds like you got Canelo winning?
No. I like Golovkin. I think Golovkin is going to land the heavier shot, and he's also going to be the guy coming forward. That's his style. Like he says, it's Mexican style, even though he's not the Mexican fighter. But he's got that Chavez style where I do think it's going to be tit for tat over the first half. But I do think it's not always a bad habit. But I think against Golovkin, it's a bad habit. Canelo likes to go to the ropes, and he does it because, generally speaking, against the guys that he's been fighting, he's able to do it, and he's able to dish out punishment as he's working off the ropes. But against Golovkin, I think it's a mistake. I think going against the ropes, even if he's blocking Golovkin's shots to the head and body with his forearms or his shoulders, it's going to take strength away from him. It's going to take away from his stamina. It's going to take away from his own speed, power, and snap. And I think at that point, I believe Triple G is going to take over. So I think Triple G is going to come hard down the stretch of a very good fight, of a competitive fight, but I think he's going to win legitimately enough rounds to where he gets the decision on the scorecards. I will say this, though. Canelo's the star. And in the past, we've seen judges, at least one official judge, bend over backwards for Canelo. We had that in the Floyd Mayweather fight with C.J. Ross, who had it 114-114, mm-hmm. a draw. We had that one scorecard, I think it was 117-111, against Arislandi Lara in a fight that could have been a draw, or 115-113 either way. And a lot of ringside observers thought that the Cotto fight was closer than the official scorecards indicated. So that tells you the judges are like, okay, this guy is the star in boxing. This is the guy who puts butts in the seats. You know, we want boxing to be strong. Mm-hmm. There's a close round. They give it to Canelo. So that if it goes the distance and it's really competitive and it's legitimately close, I expect Triple G's side to be sweating bullets. I really do. But I want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, including the Nevada State Athletic Commission, including the officials, especially the official judges. And I want them to be fair. I'm hoping that they're fair. And if they're being fair, I believe the fight goes the distance. If Triple G legitimately wins the majority of rounds, he's going to get the decision. So my official pick is Triple G by decision.
And they could set up for a rematch, depending on what happens and how that goes down. And
right.
might be able to see it again if they're ready to go at it again. I mean, it feels like the kind of boxer that, you know, you might get your trilogy out of it if it's really going good. Especially if, you know, people are arguing and debating. I know how you get on Twitter and folks going back and forth, and everybody's got something up there.
Yeah.
So it might set up for Vegas to maybe do this one more time or maybe two more times.
It could be a trilogy, yeah.
Where can people follow you and catch you online?
You can follow me on Twitter.
Yeah,
I'm usually well behaved, but I occasionally lose my mind. It happens. It's at Dougie Fisher, DougieFischer. That's also my Instagram and my Periscope handle. And I'm the editor of RingTV.com, and that's the official website for the Ring magazine. And you can follow all of the media events, the Fight Week media events for Canelo Triple G, starting on Tuesday with the fighter arrivals. And Wednesday, there's the final press conference and public workouts with the undercard fighters, and I believe the main event fighters. And then Thursday, there's the undercard press conference and something that they call the Champions Chat, where they bring in great fighters of the past. They're probably going to bring in great middleweights like Marvin Hagler and Tommy Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard. You know, the Four Kings, Roberto Duran, and they chat, and it's a live stream. And then Friday is the weigh-in, and there's a whole weigh-in show around that. And the fighters, I believe, are going to step on the scale at 1 p.m. Pacific time, a little bit earlier than usual. But that's going to be absolutely electric. They're going to hold that in the MGM Grand's Garden Arena. And I wouldn't be surprised if they had 18,000 people there just to see these guys step on the scale. But all of these Fight Week media events are going to be streamed live on RingTV.com. And also, I believe, HBO's YouTube channel. And I'm sure several other platforms, because this is a fight with international appeal and international attention.
Well, Doug, hey, once again, man, you brought the heat to the RSG platform, one mic, and as we did for you last time, we have this segment of drop the mic, where we like to have our guests just kind of close us out one more time, and whatever you feel like you want to say, drop the mic, and when you're done, just say drop the mic, and we'll close the show out, and so we'll let you drop the mic here on RSG.
Well, I guess I'll just say that let's Canelo credit. We gave him a lot of heat. We gave him a lot of grief. Even in his own country, the sports media and the great former fighters who were in the Hall of Fame questioned his courage, questioned his honor, questioned his integrity. They said he was a coward. They said he was afraid. They said he was trying to wait out Triple G. Well, he's fighting Triple G. Triple G is higher ranked pound for pound. Triple G is the consensus number one rated middleweight in the world by every respectable publication. So you can't say he's fighting an old Triple G or a faded or slipping Triple G. So if you discredited Canelo last year for not fighting Triple G, give him credit this year. Don't say that he's overconfident. Don't say that he was trying to wait Triple G out. Triple G is going to come correct. He's not an old 35. The man turned pro at 25, so there's not too much wear and tear. And as we know, he's used to knocking guys out. So this is the guy that Canelo is going to fight. The fight is happening. It's the biggest legitimate championship box happening in boxing. Obviously, credit to Triple G and K2 Promotions and his promoter, Tom Loeffler. But let's give Team Canelo and Golden Boy Promotions credit for making this fight. They were the money side, the A side. They didn't play it safe. They're fighting a dangerous monster in the middleweight division.
There we go. We dropped the mic.
There's one thing I want you to do for me.
What?
Come here. Win.